New York is the city that never sleeps, and neither does Sal Licata. From Flushing in the Bronx to the Meadowlands and MSG, Sal sounds off on the biggest sports news of the day. Welcome to WFAN Daily with Sal Licata.
Hi, another edition of WFAN Daily. Of course, we've been having fun talking to some different people about different things in the world of New York sports. Today, I want to welcome in Joe DiMeo, who you can find on the Mets pod for SNY.TV. Him and Connor Rogers do a great job breaking down all things Mets on that podcast. And I want to talk to Joe, who we text a lot or at least DM a lot about certain conversations as it pertains to the Mets. And this arguably, Joe, the biggest offseason, I mean, that I can remember. I mean, would you say this is the biggest offseason for the Mets since, what, 2005-ish? Are we going back that far?
For sure. I mean, think about it, Sal. After the 2005, 2006, into the collapse years run, it's a lot of not great times being a Mets fan. So, yeah, I think this is definitely the biggest offseason. And when you look at how they set up last offseason, it all kind of circles to where they are now. It was all about this offseason. And obviously 2024 just happened to go their way.
And you and I were in agreement before we get to current day, just the history of it. The reason why I say 2005 is because that's the last time the Mets were big players in free agency. Yeah. It didn't mean, obviously, they've had successful seasons since then. But in 2014, like, that was the first time they signed an actual real free agent in Granderson or Bartolo or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, I know they traded for Cespedes in 2015, but it wasn't like they were big time players in free agency the way that they are now. And I love what you just said, because you and I had conversations about this last offseason where we both agreed, I'm not going after Snell or Bellinger, Chapman, whoever it was. I forget all the other players that were out there a year ago, but I didn't want those B and C level guys. I wanted Yamamoto. And if not, don't do anything. Just go out there, try to build a sound team, which is exactly what they did. And they won, which now sets them up perfectly with the finances and potentially going to take a run at Soto. So you're smarter with this stuff than I am, and you're more in touch with it. How are the Mets' finances right now, let's say in comparison to the Yankees, as it pertains to the 2025 season and beyond?
So it all depends on what Hal Steinbrenner wants to do financially. And I know there was quotes from him yesterday, and he was saying we could sign whoever we want.
Yeah.
Yeah, the sustainability of the payroll, that is the quote that I always go back to that Hal said in May. He said, having a $300 million payroll year over year is not a sustainable thing. And that's his prerogative. I know he's the Yankees, and they shouldn't be that way. The Mets, on the other hand, won a lot more payroll flexibility. Let's talk really quickly on Soto, just to use round numbers. If we said that he signs for $50 million a year, wherever he signs, that would put the Yankees, as their roster's currently constructed, and that includes, obviously, all the guaranteed contracts like Judge and Cole and Stanton and down the line. That includes arbitration raises and all the, like, the little ancillary things that Major League Baseball forces on every team's payroll. The Yankees' payroll would be at, like, $294 million before they did a single other thing. So Hal would certainly have to be in a position where he stretched beyond what he said is not sustainable. On the other hand,
I was just saying, he could potentially then, so that's with Soto and nothing else changing, then they would have to then trade something if, in fact, they wanted to bring something else in, whether it's Marcus Stroman's $18 million or I don't know.
Who the heck wants that?
That's the thing. Right. I mean, they got Rodon, they've got Stanton, they've got LeMahieu. They've got we were just talking about this. Stroman, like those guys, they're on. Who's going to want to trade for them? Well, they got bad money spent is the point.
And the Mets are getting closer and closer to not having really much bad money on their payroll. And their flexibility this year is unlike anything else that I've seen, certainly because the Mets spending at this level is still new to me, right? It's only, the last couple of years. The Mets payroll right now, including everything I talked about the Yankees, it's like $170 million. So if you add 50 of Juan Soto onto that books, they're at 220. Their payroll last year is $370 million. So whether they want to go to that number again or not, I don't think they do.
Right.
Regardless, if they sign Juan Soto. Right. And regardless, if they want to sign Juan Soto and land him, that doesn't stop Steve Cohen and the Mets from doing anything else they want to do. If that's Pete Alonso, if that's Willie Adames, if that's some of the starting pitchers that you and I think both don't really want, but we're not making the decisions. They just have the flexibility to do whatever it is that they desire.
Okay, so let's then say, and we'll play it out with the Mets here. Let's say they bring in Soto. And again, it's a big if, but let's say that they do. They certainly have the finances to do it. Let's say they do it at $50 million a year. That gets them to, would you say, 230 roughly? Where would it
get? 220? 220, yeah.
Okay, all right, from 170, 50. Okay, so 220 for the Mets. That means well within reason to expect either Adames, let's just say, or Alonso, which to me is the key. It can't just be Soto in the lineup. It's got to be Soto and I want Soto and Adames, but it could be Soto and Alonso. Either way, it's Soto plus. And I think some Mets fans are scared off, but the reality is it's going to be Soto plus if they're able to get Juan Soto.
It will, 100%. This is, you know, I said it kind of right at the outset of the show. I think the Mets were planning for this winter. I think last year's whole design was one-year deals, and the only one, the only non-one-year deal was Sean Manaea, which had the opt-out, and obviously he opted out because he had a fantastic season. It reminds me of what the Dodgers did a couple years back, where the only move they really made was signing J.D. Martinez to a one-year deal, ironically, and that led to the payroll flexibility and Shohei Ohtani pulling the stunt he did with all the deferred money. Right. Helped the Dodgers out a ton, but I think there's a lot of parallels between what the Dodgers did prior to last offseason and what the Mets are doing now.
Who are the Mets still paying that's dead money or bad money? Like they look, the Verlander trade, Verlander and Scherzer are both incredible, incredible trades. I said it at the time. Yep. Amazing that Billy Epler found a sucker to take on Max Scherzer to not only get rid of some of that money, but to take back prospects. Like that is a ridiculous steal. And they got fortunate, maybe not fortunate, but also smart enough to look ahead and say, trade Verlander, let him be somebody else's problem with the injuries. And assuming he's going to get injured, they're not going to be on the hook for the extra $17.5 million, whatever it was. Yep. So they save money there. What are we looking at with dead money for the Mets this year?
Nothing. They don't have any dead money. I guess if you want to talk, quote unquote, bad contracts, and I don't even think they're particularly bad contracts. Jeff McNeil has 2 years and $30 million left. And Starling Marte has 1 year and 20. Like, other than that, Kodai Senga is making $15 million a year for a couple more years. That's not really much. And Edwin Diaz is at 20. So, like, it's there's not really even bad money on the payroll. I think Jeff McNeil is certainly a trade candidate this offseason. And, you know, perhaps Starling Marte is as well if they want to eat some of that money to move on from him, depending on how the roster shakes out. Payroll is in a good spot, in my opinion. Okay. They have very few long-term commitments, which I think is something David Stearns will always want his payroll sheet to look like.
Where do you think Soto ends up?
I'm in alignment kind of with what you've always said is I think this guy has always wanted the most money. He was signed as an international free agent, developed, brought up by the Nationals. They win a World Series, and he turns down $450 million. Because you just didn't want that. I think Juan Soto is money hunting. I think the visits and the meetings and all that, I'm sure he's interested in the player development and the organizational plan because he might be committing himself for the rest of his career to whatever team he signs with. But at the end of the day, I think his and Scott Boras's eyes are on getting more per year than Shohei Ohtani did and getting more total value than Shohei Ohtani did. That is, I think, their primary focus. And to me, I think anyone spending too much time on the ancillary things are, it's a little arrogant, in my opinion, to think that for whatever reason, Juan Soto wouldn't want to sign for the most money.
Right. And you think the Mets are going to give him the most money?
Yeah. Yeah. I think they planned for this and I wouldn't be stunned even slightly if this number comes in at miraculously 701, 702. Right. I think, and you could defer a little bit. It won't be certainly at the Ohtani level, but I think Scott Boras, Juan Soto want to set records. And Steve Cohen, if he really wants to, can make this entire contract back in like, I don't know, three fiscal quarters at 0.72.
Right, which is just a beautiful thing that he's running the Mets. Okay, so we agree there with Soto. Now, whether that happens or not, who knows, but we agree on Soto. I want Adames next. What would be your next move, or how would you build out the rest of the lineup?
I'm Alonzo over Adamas, and I understand Adamas as a player. He's more well-rounded than Pete Alonzo is. The reality to me is Pete Alonzo is a better hitter in every single category that exists. And I think what's really important when you're building out a team around Juan Soto, and part of the pitch has to be, this is the protection you're going to have behind you in the lineup. As much as I love Mark Vientos, you love Mark Vientos.
Now,
are we prepared? Yeah. Are we prepared to pitch to Juan Soto that your protection is Mark Vientos when the alternative is Aaron Judge, right? Not that Pete is Aaron Judge either. I think it just, it helps in that pitch. And frankly, the emotional side of things do play a little bit of a role. Mm-hmm. I'd be lying if I said they didn't. And I think you could get Pete for less years, less dollars. And I think ultimately it'll make the fans a little happier. And I think the year that Pete had this year wasn't great by any standard. And certainly the runners in scoring position thing was a huge problem. To me, I think he was pressing the entire year, worried about his contract, worrying about free agency, and he finally relaxed in the playoffs. And we saw what Pete Alonso's capable of. So to me, I'm leaning Alonso over Adamas. And, you know, a couple secondary things. Theoretically, Adamas could play third base, or theoretically could play second base. He never has, so it's a bit of a projection.
For me, it would be third, by the way, if I were to bring him in.
I would agree. So if they sign Adamas, I think it's third, but it's ultimately a projection. How good would he translate as a third baseman? And this is really in the weeds and stuff that you may not care about, but I do. If you sign a second qualifying offer free agent, so where the Mets were from a spending standpoint with their luxury tax payroll, if they sign Juan Soto, they lose their second highest pick, their fifth highest pick, and $1 million in international bonus money, which, cool, it's Juan Soto. Don't care about the picks. If you sign Adamas on top of that, you're now giving up your second, third, fifth, sixth, and $2 million in international bonus money to sign both Adamas and Soto. So you could save those picks and money if you keep Alonso.
And that wouldn't impact them as far as Alonso, because he's theirs or was
correct.
Their property?
Okay. Correct.
So that's a big thing right there. That's something like I wouldn't even look at. Again, not that I would make high importance on that, but to do it with both guys, Soto
if
and
it's
Adamas.
If it's a tiebreaker kind of thing, right, where it's like, the values in your eyes contractually end up similar. Adamas is probably worth more than Alonso is, but if you get it into a tie situation, do you lean the emotional factor in? We also don't want to lose two more draft picks on top of the two we're losing for Soto.
For the record, I'm fine with Alonso coming back. Like, I wouldn't even make a stink about it at all. I just prefer Adamas, maybe the clutch numbers. There's something about Adamas that's a gamer that I love.
Doubt.
But if it's Soto and Alonso, I think that would still be fine for the Mets. What would you do, before we get to the pitching aspect of it, what would you do at second base? You mentioned potentially trading Jeff McNeil. I certainly wouldn't be opposed to that. Are we looking at Acuna? Are we looking at Jet Williams eventually? I know maybe Iglesias could be a stopgap there. Or Mauricio coming back? What are we looking at with the infield mix, assuming it's Soto in right and Alonso at first base?
I think if they don't keep Jeff McNeil is your second baseman. I think if you do trade Jeff McNeil, which I put out an article for SNY.TV. I listed out five trade candidates for the Mets this offseason. One of them was Mariners right-handed pitcher Luis Castillo, who you may know from his days with Cincinnati. The Mariners have a stacked rotation, right, with him and Bryce Miller and Brian Wu and George Kirby and Logan Gilbert, and they're looking for second baseman and third baseman. So I proposed the hypothetical of Jeff McNeil plus couple prospects, and you bring Castillo in. And if that were the case, I'm running Luis Angel Acuna out there at second base on opening day. I'm bringing back Jose Iglesias as a utility guy to kind of be a mentor and help off the bench. As awesome as his year was in 2024, I would not feel comfortable heading into 2025 guaranteeing Iglesias at bats of honestly any kind. So I would lean Acuna on opening day. And then to your point, Ronnie Mauricio coming off the ACL, Jet Williams.
Where are we at with him? Where are we at with Mauricio right now? And is he's third base at all or just second? What positions are we looking at for Mauricio?
I think he's honestly more comfortable at third base than he is at second, but he can play second. So what happened is he tore his ACL, as everyone knows, last December in the Dominican Winter League. And I think it was early June. He had to get a cleanup surgery for some scar tissue or whatever, and that kind of delayed his rehab. And he's getting close to baseball activities. He's not quite there yet. I think the anticipation is he should be ready for spring training unless something else happens. And he has that flexibility, and he's kind of a bit of a wild card because we saw him in that brief stretch.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
And not going to draw walks, but boy, when he connects to a baseball, that's the kind of stuff that you see with Pete Alonso and Giancarlo Stanton. That's special, special batted ball data.
You had your projections and your rankings, which I always love to check out for SNY.TV, the Mets prospects, top 30. Jet Williams projected to be in the bigs this coming year. What are we looking at with him?
He's been my pet cat since before the draft, and I always mess with some people in the Mets scouting department that I bothered them enough about Jet Williams that they drafted him to shut me up. But the reality here is he had obviously a almost lost season in 2024. He suffered a wrist injury, required surgery, was able to get back kind of at the end of the season and went to the Arizona Fall League, performed well there, got to be in the Fall Star game, which is the Arizona Fall League's All-Star game. And to me, he looks like a top of the order, dynamic on-base guy. It's, you know, double plus plate discipline. He, in 2023, his last full season, he drew 106 walks, and the last Mets prospect to draw over 100 walks in a season was David Wright. So this is the ability to get on base, and when he gets on base, plus athlete, at times he gets on, you might as well almost give him second base. He's ready to go. His bat the ball skills are, you know, above average. He's got a little sneaky power as a smaller guy. He's only maybe 5'6". That's kind of what he's listed at. And defensively, the Mets believe he could handle all three up the middle positions, whether that's second, short, and center. They hopefully don't need a shortstop, though.
Yeah, or center field, I wouldn't think. I know that they made the trade for Jose Siri, which is going to be a nice stopgap for potentially Gilbert. So you could give me the scouting report on Gilbert or expectations too, but I just want to know where, like, if Mauricio is ready for the big leagues and Williams is going to be ready for the big leagues this year, be curious to get your take in a second on Gilbert being ready for the big leagues potentially at some point this year. How is everybody going to fit here? Or who would be a potential trade piece for the Mets?
That's potentially a heck of a great problem to have if you just have all these big league ready, good young players. But I think, and I wrote about this last week, I believe, for SNY, talking about the Mets are in a position now where now everyone's getting close to the big leagues, and you're going to, I don't want to say a logjam, but you run the risk, to your point, Sal, where you're like, you have Mauricio, you have Acuna, you have Jet, you have Drew Gilbert. At some point in time, something's going to have to give. And I think David Stearns, after his first full year, he held back on trading any real prospects of note. I think he wanted to use this full year to assess what he has in-house. And now I think he's in a position where if the right deal were to come up, he could trade from anyone in that group. If the White Sox want some for Garrett Crochet, I think they're going to be interested. I mentioned Luis Castillo. You could look at guys like Ryan Helsley or Devin Williams if you're looking for high-end relief options. The spot where the Mets can most easily trade from, in my opinion, is that middle of the diamond infielders, maybe some center fielders. But as far as how it's all going to shake out, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. It'll be really fun to see.
But you would not give up Jett Williams. Like, if it were Acuña or Williams, which one would you give up?
I'd give up Acuña before Williams for sure.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what about Mauricio?
Mauricio, I would give up Mauricio before I would give up Williams. But what I will say is everybody's got a price. And if Jett Williams is going to get me Garrett Crochet, I think I'd be willing to move on from Jett at that point, because you're getting a frontline type of starter. If the Mets sports science staff and their pitching coaches are able to kind of rein in Crochet a little bit, it wouldn't stun me if he had a Tarek Skubal-like rise in 2025.
Yeah, it's saying a lot for you to say that you would trade Jett Williams, like you said, being that you were in love with him before they even drafted him. So that whole thing led me to the pitching stuff, and I saw you also bring up the idea of trading for Jordan Montgomery, which to me seems like a no-brainer. He's been good in New York. He's going to be a bounce-back candidate, obviously off his miserable time with Arizona. The Mets maybe get him on the cheap, good value there. They're going to need arms to fill out their rotation. What are you thinking for the Mets? I love Walker Buehler in free agency. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of other arms out there to maybe take a flyer on. I used to, Joe, be of the go get Scherzer, go get Verlander, you got to sign DeGrom, go get Corbin Burns. I'm not anymore. I think the game has evolved. I've evolved with it. I love what Stearns did a year ago. I'd like to bring back Manaea. I wouldn't even be opposed if they, whether they bring him back or let him go because they think 4 years, $100 million too much, whatever. Yeah. How are you looking at the Mets building their rotation going into 2025?
I'm trying to get some impact through trade, if I can, whether that is Crochet or Luis Castillo on a bit on the higher end. And the Jordan Montgomery situation is just absolutely crazy. Obviously a rough year. He signed deep into spring training. The qualifying offer kind of messed up his market big time. And he had a really bad year for Arizona, to the point the owner went out publicly and criticized himself for recommending it. He was like, that was like a horrible decision. And Montgomery two days later opts in to his $22.5 million player option. And
were they hoping, you know, he was going to opt out after those comments? I mean, was that part of the strategy there?
I hope the strategy was, we're going to try to bully him out of here. But Montgomery was smarter than that, exercised it. And he's a prime trade candidate. I think Arizona's going to have to eat some money to move on from him. And I don't think you'd have to give up much. So I'd love him as kind of like a guy you look at him like a number four. And if you get better than that out of him, fantastic. On the free agents market, I love Walker Buehler, just like you do. Matthew Boyd's really intriguing to me. Sean Manaea, if I could get him back for 3 years, I'm interested. Maybe a vesting option for a fourth. I would kind of tap out at the four guaranteed. Severino, take him back for two with a third vesting option. I'd tap out at three. I am very much in line and in belief of, I'm very anti long-term deals for starting pitchers unless they're very young. Like we were talking about Yamamoto last offseason.
Yeah, yeah.
I was all in. But 30, 31-year-old Corbin Burns, with people could say whatever they want about if they care about strikeout rate or not. But when it is going from here to here to here to here, 4 years in a row, going from over 12 strikeouts per nine to less than nine in 2024, that is like the red alarm of all time to me. So I would be focusing on short-term stuff, and I would really try to find my impact in the trade market. And I think the Mets will have the opportunity to do that.
You mentioned, we'll finish with this, Joe, and we really do appreciate your time and your insight. Yep. You mentioned Soto signing could take away the international pool, mm-hmm. right? And same thing with like Adames. So how would that impact Sasaki, who is now going to be pushed forward to 2025? Does that have any impact at all of how much a team or the Mets in this specific case can give Sasaki?
So it doesn't. And I only found this out earlier this week, actually, because I decided to start asking questions, because the Mets haven't signed a qualifying offer free agent in the Steve Cohen era. How crazy is that?
Wow. That is crazy.
They haven't signed a single external one. So this would be the first time that they do that. And it actually would come out of the 2026 international bonus budget. So Sasaki would be unimpacted. Where the real dilemma in the 2025 situation is, the Mets have a verbal agreement, kind of under the table, kind of how it happens in Latin America, with a young shortstop who might profile third base long-term named Elian Pena, who's projected to be, depending on where you look, the best or the second best international prospect in this entire class. I've heard comparisons to Rafael Devers for him, and that is someone the Mets are planning to sign for quite a bit of their international budget. However, talking to people throughout the game, not with the Mets, if Roki Sasaki goes to any of the 30 teams in the sport and says, I will sign with you for all of your international budget, that team's president of baseball operations, general manager, will call the head of international scouting and be like, sorry, you're losing everyone you wanted to sign because we have to issue all of this money to Sasaki. That would be someone I would drop everything for if I could. I don't think this is hyperbolic to say, you can't name three pitchers on the planet with better pure stuff than Roki Sasaki. And he's only 23 years old. You'd have him under control through 2030 at the standard MLB contract of league minimum for the next 3 years, then 3 years of arbitration, and onward he would go, obviously, into free agency. So that's going to be fascinating to follow. I'll believe it's not the Dodgers when it's not the Dodgers, but I certainly know the Mets are interested.
It would probably be the Dodgers, so I don't even want to get my hopes up for it.
Yes.
However, I think you just nailed it. To me, Sasaki will be the most valuable asset a team could get. I don't care what young stud, Bobby Witt, you name him in the sport. Sasaki, at his price and being under control with his stuff and his potential, will become instantly the most valuable asset in Major League Baseball the second he's here.
I think so, too. And it'll be – and it's a seamless fit with the Mets in a sense, right? Because these Japanese pitchers, as much as we want to talk about the five-man rotation, I got news for you. The Mets are going to be in a six-man rotation if Kodai Senga stays intact. So if you take Sasaki, you can just plug him in. It's perfect. So they'll both be set up in the six-man. But that's that's going to be an interesting market that – it's going to be quiet for a bit. He'll probably take visits to some teams in December. He cannot sign until January 15th. He's not allowed to by rules of the international market. So it's going to be a while before this decision is made. He'll start visiting teams, I assume, sometime next month.
Let's take Sasaki out, and this will be the last one. I lied to you. This is it.
Yeah.
Give me your projected then six man. Is Budo going to be part of the starting rotation? Are we having Tyler McGill in there?
Yeah.
I know that it's thin right now. So right now it's what? Senga, Peterson. Are we throwing Tyler McGill? What else are we looking at with the Mets projected rotation? Assuming maybe one trade, a free agency, give me your rotation.
Yeah, present day, it's not pretty. they have a lot of work to do. To me, I want Jose Buto to be a starting pitcher. As well as he performed in the bullpen in 2024, the Mets obviously sorely needed it. They had no one they could rely on. It was always difficult for Buto to kind of bounce back. That's why it didn't matter if he threw 15 pitches or 45 pitches. He was down for 3 days or down for 4 days. That to me just screams out, this guy's a starting pitcher. He's not a reliever. So I would love to give Jose Buto that opportunity to compete for a starting job. And obviously, if it doesn't work out, you just have to hope year two as a reliever goes better. McGill is certainly in play. Paul Blackburn, who they traded
at
the deadline, he's going to be injured into spring training. He had surgery for a spinal fluid leak, which sounds gross, and didn't know that was something that could actually happen to a person. But Blackburn will be out into spring training, so he might be not quite ready for opening day. The harsh reality here is the Mets have to add minimum two, if not three, starting pitchers externally to me have a rotation that is fit to compete in 2025.
You're talking about with the six-man rotation?
Yeah, yes.
So Senga, Peterson, Budo, potentially McGill, but you really want him to be like a seventh guy and then add the three. Let's say they bring back Manaea one. Maybe take a flyer on Walker Buehler and then maybe trade for, I know the dream would be Crochet or Castillo, but it's going to take that to fill out this rotation.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of work. And David Stearns kind of said that, and he's always really coy when he talks. Like, I won't talk about this. I won't talk about that. But he's not afraid to say, I know we need starting pitching. And not only do they need starting pitching in the form of bodies, they need to make up innings. Just think about Jose Quintana put up 170-something innings. Manaea put up 180-something innings. Severino put up 180 innings. So between all of these guys, there's a lot of innings to make up. And I think it's important that they get guys not only that have potential to be, you know, better than they were this past year, like Buehler, but also guys that, frankly, even if the floor is lower, you could rely on them to take the ball every fifth, sixth day. And Jordan Montgomery is someone that certainly stands out as an option for that.
Yeah, Montgomery, right. That would be, to me, an easy piece. Just trade for him and lock him in a spot. They need bodies, quality bodies. I trust – the greatest thing I think you could say, Joe, right now is I trust this front office. I trust Stearns to figure it out. I trust Cohen to spend. That's why we're excited for the Mets this offseason. Going to be the biggest offseason in quite some time. And we'll see what this team looks like in a couple of months going into the season. All right, Joe, we appreciate your time, bro. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, Sal. Thank you.
He is Joe DiMaio. Check him out, of course. The co-host of the Mets Pod on SNY TV, always giving his prospect rankings as well, writing for SNY.TV. Great job, Joe. We'll talk to you soon down the line. That does it for this edition of WFAN Daily. Enjoy the rest of your whatever day you're listening to this on. We'll see you next time.